This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Sharmila Ganesan and Lee Chui Lin. Tonight, the floods in the East Coast once more.
First, we look at the situation on the ground and the recovery efforts that are needed. And then we discuss why flood mitigation needs to happen alongside solid climate change policies.
So tell us, what do we need to put in place to deal with climate change? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:07, and the latest numbers as of yesterday morning is that about 4,335 people have been evacuated to relief centers in Terengganu, and there are currently 89 of these relief centers across Terengganu. Really, as we continue to see flooding and people needing to move out as water levels continue to rise because of the rains.
So I do think that talking about the rain is important because there has been a tremendous amount of rainfall. I think if we compare this period of time to previous years, it is unusual. It is unusually heavy. I forget the exact number now, but it is something like we're talking about multiples. You know, it's not a little bit more than usual. We're talking about, you know, double or triple the amount of rainfall. And that's why we are seeing this kind of flooding, because it is relatively soon after the last time that this happened. And so there is a sense of deja vu, and there's also a sense of you know, just a tremendous amount of I feel such sadness, really, for the people who are having once more to evacuate their homes, who are worried about the safety of themselves, their family members. And if we look at what's being done, according to the Prime Minister, NADMA, that's the National Disaster Management Agency, of course, and the various rescue agencies have been mobilised. The fire and rescue department teams are also assisting with the evacuation process. And the Health Ministry is ensuring that, you know, SOPs are being followed at relief centres, essentially. And I think with this round of floods, what's being asked once more is not just about the response, but really about the response, but in a larger sense, the bigger response to flooding as a whole, to what can be done to prevent it, and not just you know, physical structures or things like that, but thinking long term about dealing with, as we say, these kinds of rainfall patterns and how that might affect floods in our country.
So I mentioned Terengganu's numbers earlier, right? But I didn't get to Kelantan. And I think, so in Kelantan, we're looking at about 3,200 people so far who have been evacuated. Mm. And I say that because essentially, even just in this particular round, we're talking about nearly 8,000 victims who have had to leave their homes. And this is a cycle that we keep hearing about each time this happens, right? And each time we get the same questions, we get the same sort of response, without there necessarily being a more long-term concerted effort to talk about what we need to have in place. So it feels like this cannot be the approach all the time. It cannot be a constant catch-up.
So some of the flood prevention and mitigation strategies that have been discussed by the Central Disaster Management Committee includes, looking at building facilities like the stormwater management and road tunnel. I think most of us will know it as a smart tunnel in densely populated cities. Other initiatives include things like identifying and equipping permanent evacuation centres, appointing community leaders as initial responders, introducing disaster management to education institutions, and relocating flood-prone villages. There's also talks for widening and deepening major rivers, building more dams and flood barriers, and developing a flood forecasting and warning system. So the thing that's been asked for by the PM, Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri Yaakob, is for all relevant ministries to set aside 5% of their operational and developmental expenditure for disaster preparedness efforts.
So those are all mitigation efforts, right? Mm-hmm. But if if we pay attention to that, the thing that does seem to be missing in a concerted way is that phrase, climate change. There seems to be, we hear it off and on, we hear it said in a piecemeal way, but there does seem to be a gap in terms of linking these issues, linking these constant recurring issues like the floods to climate change, and then to look at policy and see what we can do as mitigation, not just in the short term, but mitigation in the long term.
Mitigation in the long term, and I think, and thinking also about what that long term actually looks like. So, if policies are actually discussed now, for example, if we put them in place, how long after that are the relevant structures then going to be put in place, or the relevant changes in terms of relocations, for instance, or the buildings that we might build, even evacuation centres, right? What are they going to look like? Are we going to reconsider how we build them? You know, all these different things, right? Are we going to think differently about how we develop, about the ways in which we think about how we use our natural resources? So all these things will take time. When we talk about long term, we have to get started somewhere. And then we also have to acknowledge that getting started is just the first part in what is likely to be decades long, right, in terms of what happens next.
So we're going to discuss this issue, the floods in the East Coast, from two aspects. So first, we're going to get a picture of what's happening on the ground and the kind of recovery that's currently taking place. But we are also going to then take a longer view in terms of climate change and mitigation of these floods. So let us know what you think. What do we need to put in place to deal with climate change? You can call 7733290, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be speaking with Dr. Ahmad Munawar, a volunteer with Imaret. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Brave, free, Malaysia. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:14. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're discussing the floods in the East Coast. And first, we're going to look at the situation on the ground as well as the recovery that needs to happen. We'd like to hear from you, though. What do you make of this? What would you like to see put in place specifically in terms of climate change to manage situations like this? You can call 7733290, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now is Dr. Ahmad Munawar, a volunteer with Imaret. Munawar, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, thank you for inviting me.
So could you start off by telling us what the situation is like in Kelantan right now?
Bit of the situation on the ground. We know in Kelantan, it's latest, there's about 8,000 evacuees. And also in Terengganu, about 13,000. That's the latest count as in this evening. The situation is increasing in terms of evacuees. But usually, how would you look at during the floods is that number one is the rain, and number two, it's the level of the water. So if currently the situation is as in like this today, it's still quite high level of the water. So in terms of some of the areas, it's not accessible even to lorries and four-wheel drives. So it only can be accessible by boats. And secondly, we look at the rain. So as of today, the rain there is still rain, but not as bad as yesterday. So if it's maintained, then probably tomorrow the water will start recedes, and then probably the day after tomorrow, more accessible to on road lah, especially by four-wheel drive at least.
So can you take us through the process? What is it usually when it comes to evacuating people from flooded areas?
Yeah, so the process actually starts prior to that. So you have phases of disaster. So this is when the emergency phase, but prior to that is most importantly the preparation. In states or in district levels, we have what we call the PKOB, or Pusat Kawalan Operasi Bencana, which usually will be led by the district office. So even before the floods, during the warnings, even for months before that, the preparation already started to have these resources for the evacuation. So PQOB or the district office will coordinate at the district level. And then from there, the agencies involved, firstly, will be on rescue, search and rescue. So this will be by the bomber, APM, pertahanan, APM. And also sometimes also other agencies will involve, such as the military. So these are some of the agencies will be involved during the SNR, which is will be coordinated as soon as possible, as soon as there's already floods lah. So what happened is that all these search and rescue teams will be deployed right away, and then certain places there will be alarms, sirens, and then all these places that are potentially or has already flooded, they will be called in. This SNR will take this evacuate these people from their houses to the centers. So the evacuation centers is already set it up. So there's already months of preparation that not just the center but the resources in terms of foods and then in terms of shelter. So all of that has already prepared. So when there's floods, when there's already emergency phase, this is all activated right away.
What are the challenges when it comes to bringing people to safety?
Yeah, so during some of the challenges, of course, the dangerous the danger of evacuating, especially when there's high level of water. And then number two is actually the flow. The flow is quite on some areas, it's quite fast, the flow. And because of that, it's very, very dangerous. That is why even the transportation or the modes of transportation to evacuate, it's different based on that. You can have, even the water is high level, but it's if it's the flow, it's not that fast, then probably you can use a lorry or a four-wheel drive. But even boats, there are certain boats that can go to a certain, there's a current water flow. If it's too fast, you cannot use the simple boat. You need to have a different types of boats. So that's number one in terms of this safety. Number two, of course, safety of the rescuer. And of course, the people, you have the high-risk vulnerable communities, high-risk vulnerable groups. And that is why that is usually the priority to save them. And then also in terms of also one of the thing is the mentality of the people. Sometimes when you have a very community who's very resilient and floods are just normal for them, it's one of the difficulty to ask them even to evacuate their houses. Because who wants to evacuate from the houses? Their belongings, their valuables are in there. So that's why it's sometimes difficult in that way lah. So this is some of the challenges and some of that we see on the ground.
Who are some of the segments of community who are generally most vulnerable during floods and natural disasters?
Yeah. So usually I'm talking about the mostly most vulnerable groups, such as the bedridden patients, the elderly, and then of course you have babies and then pregnant ladies. So there's one thing, it's physical, and there's another thing in terms of the risk of during the flood itself. If you do not evacuate them earlier, for example, they have risk of some medical conditions, so you need to evacuate them earlier. So these are the people when you do a search and rescue and you have limited resources, these are the people that you evacuate them earlier, or at least these are the people that even though you have these evacuation centers inside, but these people you need to evacuate earlier, because if there's an emergency, it's very difficult to evacuate when there's already flood. So if it's already accessible by four-wheel drives or by when the water level is not that high, you try to evacuate them as soon as possible.
So the according to reports, the first casualty in the Kelantan flood is actually a 70-year-old man. I was wondering if there are specific measures that we have to consider to protect senior citizens in this situation.
Yeah, so just to correct that, I think that particular incident, what happened is that, and I asked, we have our friends at that area in Dabung. So what happened is that elderly fell and slipped when he was trying to hop onto a sampan or boat. And this is why it's very critical, and during the evacuation, the process is really number one is by a trained personnel. Number two is usually the people themselves take care of themselves lah. And it's, if you notice that it's quite rare that in the East Coast when there's floods, there's a lot of casualty. Number one, it's because the people are so prepared, they're so resilient, they already know what to do. And they even know at this level of water, I need to evacuate. At this level, okay, it's still quite safe. They can even, I've been to Kelantan for a lot of time for flood release. They can even know when there's a lot of rain, it's going to be flood. When there's lot of strong winds, there's going to be flood. So they already know. So from there, they already prepared and what to do, what next to do. And they already prepared who, what to bring, who to evacuate first and everything. So yes, there are certain vulnerable people who will need to be evacuated early. But of course, when you have a very good preparedness, not just the authority for the search and rescue, but also the community, when you have that both in sync, then usually the process of evacuation is smooth.
So as of yesterday morning, over 4,000 people have been evacuated in Terengganu, over 3,000 in Kelantan. How does this number translate to the kind of help and support that needs to be provided on the ground?
Yeah, so basically, this is numbers of evacuees. And of course, there's translated to families. So for example, for right now, in Kelantan itself, there's 50 evacuation centres, 8,000 flood victims, and also translated to 2,600 families. So number one, the needs are for sure is the shelter. So that's why you have the evacuation centers. And that's in the centers, you need all these facilities. You have tents, you need pillows and stuff. Basically just as a shelter. Number two, it's the foods. The food to equip at the center. Then number three, of course, the next step is the medical needs lah at the center, at the evacuation center itself. So this is usually the priority of the needs, at least for the 1, 2, 3 days during the evacuation phase and emergency phase, to ensure that this is happening. Of course, you do not see any much of a problem right now in the East Coast. Everything is well equipped. You do not see a lot of crying for help. No need, not enough food and all, enough shelters, because it's already prepared. It's already, even the centers, they already know where to go and how many there. So that is in terms of the needs there, but also you need the people running it. So who's in charge of who? Usually the JKM will be in charge of the shelter and also the foods. And then the medical team is usually where the Ministry of Health. So this, you have the needs and also the people who are running it. And also you need a poor coordination, especially for a district level, from the PKOB lead by the DO.
Now, according to the Department of Irrigation and Drainage, four rivers are still currently above danger level. What does this mean for people who are living in those areas?
Yeah, so basically, these areas and these warnings are basically to warn the people staying there that actually it's not safe enough to be there. So you can even like sort of predict which area is gonna flood, and then this is the area that, okay, if it's rising, then probably you need to evacuate early, and then of course sometimes if you and the people on the ground, sometimes we can sort of forecast where are the areas will be predict that it will be flood later. For example, I can say, for example, in Kelantan, you have the hulu area where if it's raining and then the water is high over there, then probably the next few days at the Kota Baru and the Kuala areas, that is where it's going to flood after this. So these are some of the data and analysis that even the authorities can use to for search and rescues early, and also to prepare the centers.
Munawar, we just have a few seconds left. How can people reach out to help?
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of NGOs are helping around. I'm also currently setting up a team, a volunteer under Be Vital. So it's a medical volunteer teams. And also there's many NGOs, and most importantly, spread the words, especially the people at the East Coast. And then to be safe and stay sound, and hopefully this will be for a short term, this flight.
Munawar, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Ahmad Munawar, a volunteer with IMARED, weighing in on the flood situation in the East Coast. Send your thoughts our way. What do we need to put in place to deal with these floods? What do we need to put in place to deal with climate change? We'll get to your messages after this. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:43. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're looking at the floods in the East Coast and extending that conversation to talk about not just the situation on the ground, but what needs to be done in terms of mitigation, particularly when it comes to how we manage climate change. So we've been asking you for your thoughts on that. What would you like to see done in terms of better climate change policies? Keep those thoughts coming. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, and we have these messages.
So let's start with Simon, who says, one has to ask if the Pusat Operasi only exists for Kelantan and Terengganu. From the earlier explanation, they're the first level response and order givers to coordinate efforts on the ground. During our crisis in December, we were still pointing fingers even after 3 days into the disaster. And I assume, Simon, that that is a reference to the difference in reaction between Kelantan and Terengganu and what we saw here in the Klang Valley. And that was a much criticised reaction. I don't think we have to retread it, but there was a lot of stuff about speed of response, whether people knew where to go. And I think this the point about Pusat Operasi is very important, because our guest Munawar, from who volunteers at, you know, all these various organizations that deal with, right, and that respond to floods, mentioned and actually went into some detail with the fact that these Pusat Operasi, they don't just pop up overnight, right? They don't just exist in response to the rain. Instead, the kind of preparedness and the getting ready for it is something that exists months in advance. So in response to that, I would think, actually, I don't know for certain, but I don't think that our response readiness in the rest of the country is as robust. I don't think they exist only for Kelantan and Terengganu, but I think that they are most robust there.
And these comparisons were actually made right after the Klang Valley floods, right, where people talked about the kind of preparedness that exists in the East Coast states, and that perhaps we shouldn't be taking for granted that we don't need to make those kinds of preparations. And in fact, that wasn't the first time KL had faced those kind of floods, and yet those measures hadn't been put in place yet.
Yeah, they hadn't been put in place. And also, I think just the other thing that struck me is we've been talking about this quite a bit, actually, in relation to the tremors last week as well. Just our preparedness in terms of natural disasters and whether we actually know what to do and how much communication that there is. And so I think it's likely that we would feel quite a lot more reassured if, A, we knew how prepared the operational centers were for around the country, I think, but then also to link it back to what we've been talking about, that larger point of preparedness, knowing that our country is actually ready for changing weather patterns.
So Gina says, I would love to see more efforts for prevention rather than mitigation. Some developers are still damaging the land without much consequence, all for profit, not to mention all the logging and so on. When will this end?
So I agree with that. I also think that that is, that has me thinking, Gina, about the diversity that is required in terms of, not diversity, but the comprehensiveness, yeah, that is required or that we would like to see from a response or from a climate change policy. Because this point about developers as well as logging what looks like a responsible use of natural resources, that's one part of it. The other part, and I think I've made it quite clear I'm interested in this, the other part that I'm thinking about is something like infrastructure, and then also our response to what kinds of industries that we actually fund and encourage in our country.
There's a pretty strong theme on overdevelopment coming through. So we have two messages really that speak to that. We have Pooja saying, Malaysia is such a beautiful land. It used to be so green, but now it's bare with all these unnecessary skyscrapers everywhere. It's sad to see that it's become Mother Nature fighting back against those who keep hurting the land. Meanwhile, there was someone else who brought up buildings.
Selena,
yes. So Selena says, we have the second flood less than 6 months after the one in December. We really have to do something about this. We need measures to protect our environment. We need more forested land. Stop taking away trees for tall buildings we obviously don't need.
Comprehensive climate change policy also means that actual planning would be required, actual assessments of whether developments are required would be important as well. And I think what it looks like to, if you're going to build responsibly and to actually talk about and to actually look at the risk assessments more seriously, but also I think take a more holistic look at, okay, so if this goes up, what does that mean? What does that actually mean? Aside from being able to get more people into these offices or into these homes.
We have, let's see, we have Lai saying, it's really heartbreaking to see this happening over and over again. Imagine rebuilding your home after floods 1 year, and the next year it's the same thing. I really feel for the elderly and the sick with no sense of security. And that's actually a great point, right? When we talk about areas, and of course, Kelantan and Terengganu are great examples of this, where this is actually a yearly occurrence, and an occurrence that we should be learning lessons from in terms of future planning. And again, every year, we keep seeing the same images and the same sorts of stories coming out.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely it. And it also reflects why we're seeing this hunger, right, for a more... for a proper response. And I think what we're seeing now is a great response in terms of aid being offered. But what we're discussing is more like, well, do we want to do this year after year? Not even year after year. That time period, that span in between floods is shortening. So, yeah, I just think that there needs to be a certain sense of urgency here.
Keep those thoughts coming if you'd like to weigh in on the floods in the East Coast, but also in a larger sense, the sort of climate change policies we need in place to be able to mitigate it. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be revisiting a previous segment that we've done on this. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Beating fickle mindsets, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
It is 6:52. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn, and we're discussing the East Coast floods today. And we've been asking you for your thoughts. We are looking at it from, well, earlier we looked at the situation on the ground, but now we are closing off that conversation by looking at climate change policies and the kind of structures we need to have in place for the long term. And we'd like to hear from you. What do we need to put in place to deal with climate change? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We are going to revisit a previous interview that we've done on this topic. But very quickly before that, I wanted to just read this message from Juan, which I think is a nice lead into those clips.
So Juan simply says, we need sustainable development.
Yeah, and I think that really, I mean, that's really what we've been talking about, right? And often this comes up. These are buzzwords that are often put in place, but I don't know that we do enough to actually implement things like that. So on that note, we do have a previous interview that Earth Matters did with Ili Nadia Zulfakar, who's committee member and chairperson of Gabungan Darurat Iklim Malaysia and Klima Action Malaysia. So first, Nadia spoke about what Gabungan Darurat Iklim Malaysia involves.
So this is a coalition based on a loose coalition of civil society organizations in Malaysia pushing for the declaration of climate emergency. I think this past few years since the massive climate protests that we have in Malaysia in 2019, there's a number of groups and societies in Malaysia that looks for a greater emphasis on urgent climate action here in Malaysia. And, the declaration of climate emergency could be one of the solutions to somehow pave that way for greater emphasis, greater awareness, and also ambitious action by the Malaysian government and people.
So Nadia also went through the factors that contributed to the worsening flood situation at the time.
There's a lot of reasons behind this. I think that's the reason why the investigation is really important, so we can definitely find out the main key reasons. There's the loss of our rainfall catchment areas due to the deforestation, both legal and illegal. They are still the same thing. And the degazettment of forest reserves and conversion to plantations, mining and mixed development. We have seen this happening over and over again in states like in Pahang, in Selangor, where the situation was really bad, including in Kelantan, where we've seen a lot of civil societies, scientists even that does research in those areas has come up with a lot of suggestions on how we can preserve and conserve these areas. We should, because they are basically our last benteng pertahanan, so to speak, yep, against all these disasters. And I think it's been debated in Twitter a lot about this poorly planned development. Yep. I think we all know about this, whether the EIAs, do they actually work? Whether this kind of impact risk assessments in forest reserves, are they effective in reducing the kind of degradation that we are seeing all around us? Mm. And there's also the planning, the urban planning that we've been seeing here in Malaysia, cities that are not built with the kind of climate proofing lens. They built with low permeability to absorb rainfall, so everything's all cemented, so water can't really be absorbed. This is a strong, I would say, mitigation against the intense rainfall that we will definitely be seeing more within the next few years, few decades or so. And then there's also the questions of our water bodies. There's a changes in our river management systems from unchecked canalization, and there's a loss of buffer zones, riparian zones. And I think this is very much linked to how we develop our areas. Yeah. What kind of development drivers that we are seeing, it's certainly based on profit. It's not based on people and planet. So this is, I think, really the kind of agenda that a lot of groups should be pushing for. How do we implement these kind of changes? How can we halt this sort of push for more fragmentation, more degradation?
Nadia also talked about the demands that GDI-MY are making to the government.
So we have set some few demands, and the key ones, I think the most important one, is for the Malaysian government to declare this disaster a national disaster and to urgently authorize the formation of a special commission to formally investigate this disaster and the efficacy of the response actions, and to recommend reparation or compensation to those negatively impacted by the negligence on the part of the government. I think this is really important that the independent members of this special commission must comprise of independent scientists. and local experts on flood-related issues. And they have to also be inclusive, having representations from affected communities. The NGOs that are doing a lot of this rescue and relief work, so many data that we can get from them. And then we also need to include disaster risk reduction management experts, legal experts as well, our health professionals, town planning, sustainability experts. These are, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, could contribute to this, the formation of this special commission, and it has to be independent. And lastly, this investigation findings must be read out and debated in the parliament as soon as possible in 2022.
That was Ely Nadia Zulfakar, committee member and chairperson of Gabungan Darurat Iklim Malaysia and Klima Action Malaysia. For the full podcast, look up East Malaysia Prepared for Extreme Weather Events on bfm.my or our mobile app. Let us know, what do we need to put in place to deal with climate change? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.